Namaste. So today, 21st of June, is a day which is being celebrated in India as the Vat Savitri Purnima Day. It is for us is the more important part. It is the day when the Arya was announced. Of course, it's the International Yoga Day. So it's very interesting that the International Yoga Day falls on the day when the Arya was announced. Though the first issue came out on 15th of August 1914, but the announcement was made on 21st June 1914. So coming back to what Savitri, what it represents. So this is the day with which we see the opening canto of Savitri. This was the day when Satyavan must die. So there are those 3 days when there is Vat Savitri Puja. That is also in June. I think 4th, 5th, 6th June. It was on those days. And they were the days when Savitri is supposed to have kept a 3 day, 3 night vrat or tapasya. This tapasya had armed her for the event that would happen on the Vat Savitri Purnima. So what happened that day was that Satyavan died and then Satyavan came back to life. So the entire Savitri epic is basically about the events of this day. Of course, in far back times. Because obviously, I mean, we can imagine that it's the same day which is being celebrated. So the whole story of Savitri narrated is basically 5 to 6 hours. Because when Satyavan, Dumatsena asked Satyavan that what happened, why you didn't come back, why you took so long. And he says, behold, in the noon. So noon he has left his house of clay, which is the body. And by the time he comes back, it's evening. That's how it is described. So we can say roughly about 6 hour story, that entire epic of 24 pages that Shurvinda has written is for about this day. Not about this day, but on this day, and about 6 hours from afternoon to evening. Now coming back to the what, it's very interesting that of course we know that in Sanatana Dharma, which is India, we celebrate life. We of course have the ascetic and the monistic order also, which is part of the totality of life. It's unfortunate that today we have started seeing the sannyasis as the representative of the Indian culture. But if you go into Indian culture, which many people don't understand, I was hearing somebody say that, well, you play Holi, you play Diwali, yes, because we celebrate life. And this is something very beautiful. The reason we celebrate life is because life is come down from the divine. We don't say that life is its origin is devilish. Life too owes its origin to the divine. Therefore, it's a cause of celebration. Of course, this celebration should lead ultimately to the ultimate celebration, that is the divine consummation of life. But we celebrate life in all its complexity and colors and seasons, and even Amavasya is celebrated and Purnima is celebrated and everything is celebrated. The moon is celebrated and the sun is celebrated, the stars are celebrated and the rivers are celebrated, the flowers are celebrated, the animals are celebrated. So it's like, because we have a comprehensive vision of the divine in all things. This does not mean that we don't believe in the one divine. We do believe, this is not just a belief, because it has been again and again, there is the testimonial of the great sages that there is but one reality. It's also logical that there will be one reality. But at the same time, this one reality expresses itself in countless ways. This is the background, and among them, one of the ways is tree. So what does the tree represent? Tree represents cosmic manifestation. So it's wherever tree, you know, because tree is a very unique living creature which draws food from the sun. It nourishes itself from the sun. Very unique. Photosynthesis. Of course, science loses the joy of things. It draws from the sun. That's how it, you know, manufactures things for itself. So this is about the tree, and it has its root below, but it spreads far and wide. So the cosmic manifestation. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is described as the Aswath tree, the cosmic manifestation. So what is the Ashwath tree? It is identified as people, which is another variety of fig. The Vatvraksh, which is the banyan tree, and the people. Some people actually describe them as the masculine and feminine counterpart. So people tree is not exactly same as the banyan tree, but they are same family. So that is something, another very interesting thing. And it's very interesting tree, the banyan tree, also known as the Vat or the Bargat tree, which throws the branches downwards, the roots downwards, and they plunge into the soil. And very interesting how they pollinate, just like the cosmic manifestation. It pollinates from within. There is that little wasp which carries from one branch to another within the tree. And through that pollination, the tree starts sending roots. Very fascinating, the whole process. And as we know, it gives a shelter to many a beast. So again, the cosmic manifestation. Many trees have different names. They are sacred in Indian literature. Banyan trees, of course, the most sacred, along with the people. There is neem, which the mother has called as spiritual atmosphere. Trees are also amazing because some of them live for thousands of years. And they are home to various kinds of denizens. Of course, we know our own service tree in the ashram. That itself spreads like the banyan tree. It is amazing the way it has spread, the service tree. Because normally you see service tree, copper pod in the vicinity, you'll find it in Pondicherry. But it doesn't spread so much. This is very unique because it spreads. It gives shelter almost like the banyan tree. And the mother has used the name service. And we know that she has said souls, gods, many of these beings of other worlds, they take shelter in the tree. So trees are very fascinating. And in that, the banyan tree occupies a special place in literature. So we'll come to Savitri part little later. But it is revered in the Buddhist literature. Why? Because Gautama the Buddha received enlightenment below the banyan tree. So this one part. And then there is a very interesting parable in the Mundaka Upanishad referring to the banyan tree. Though the parable is not about the banyan tree, but the parable is that there are these two birds, the parable of the two birds. So these two birds are sitting on the fig tree, the banyan tree. And one, they are same in color and plumage. So there is the bird which is sitting a little lower on the lower branches and another bird which is sitting above. And the lower bird in a state of bliss. It's happy just to be. The higher bird is in a state of bliss, happy just to be. And the lower bird is eating the sweet figs. But then the tree has sweet figs and the bitter ones also. So it initially eats the sweet figs and after that it needs to eat, it ends up eating the bitter figs. So when the bitter figs, it starts eating the bitter figs, then it's, you know, it doesn't like the situation in which it is caught and so it looks upwards. And when it looks upwards, it sees an identical bird sitting above which is not eating anything but is in a state of enjoyment, bliss. So this parable, which is small parable, which is narrated by Swami Vivekananda, Sri Aurobindo, and many masters, because it comes from the Mundaka Upanishad, Dvasuparna. There are some variations, little bit. It's originally from the Rig Veda. So what is this parable? It's parable about the soul which has got caught up into eating the sweet, bitter fruits of creation. So when it is eating the sweet fruits, then it is completely enamored and lost within it. But sooner or later, it is going to taste the bitter fruit. And when it tastes the bitter fruit, it turns away and turns upward and sees that it is actually its origin above, the Lord who is seated above. And so it turns and becomes one with that. So there is an aside to this little story that as long as we are getting sweet fruits in life, we call it grace. But the real grace begins, it is a grace, no doubt. But the real grace begins when you get the bitter fruits. Because that is the time when you turn upward. That's why Mother says pleasure is a deception. And pain helps us. Again, we should not seek pain. It will come, plenty of it. Unasked, uncalled, without knock. It doesn't call, knock at the door, it just enters. So we should not seek it, but when it comes, we should know that this is an even greater grace. Because when this pain comes, then we turn upwards to see, is there something else? Is there somebody out there? Is there help available? And then it discovers its own self in a greater splendor. So this is interpreted in different ways, as I said, Jivatma and the divine. We can equally say the psychic being which is caught in this world and grows into the psychic being through the sweet bitter fruits. And then this is the central being, the Jivatma, but with the Lord. That part of Jivatma is always with the Lord. It knows, it has the origin blueprint. It doesn't enter into time and space in the manifestation. It's just seated above it. So whichever way we look at it, so this is the parable with regard to the water tree. Now we come to the Savitri story. So in the Savitri story, we again see that Satyavan, why the word tree? First, because Savitri prays to the tree and, you know, she does her fast, making the tree as the goddess Durga, but with the tree as the shelter. So even now, during the word Savitri fast, Indian women, whatever few are left in this world, they still weave a thread around the tree. Now you don't get to see, I think, but it's a dwindling species. But we have seen, I have seen my mother do that. Yes, many people may remember the previous generation. We don't need to do it. I'm not saying if it's a good thing or bad thing. I'm just saying that it was a reminder. But problem is, with all such reminders, sometimes we are lost in the ritual and we forget the real meaning. So now is the time for the real meaning. But they used to go around the tree. They used to do this 3-day fast, which is quite a difficult fast, and tie the thread and pray for their husband's longevity. So I'm not getting into feminism and why husband and why not the though there are proper answers to that, not what is normally understood. But anyways, so she would go around. So Savitri is supposed to have done that fast. And if you observe clearly the story, Satyavan, when does he die? He is sitting on a tree and cutting the branches. And when he is cutting, he suddenly falls. And when he falls, he says, I am experiencing the same pain that the tree would be experiencing when I am axing it. And in India, actually cutting of trees, as this what tree, peepal tree, and many of these sacred trees, including the banyan tree, is forbidden. It is considered to be sinful to cut these trees. And again, a very interesting story, that when somebody had thought of putting an axe on the banyan tree, the mother came to know, the tree, the spirit of the tree had come and told the mother that they are planning to cut me. So the tree knew the thoughts of the person even before he had actually picked up the axe. So we can imagine what degree of capacity these trees have intuitively to sense what is going on and to respond to us. So cutting a banyan tree, and of course later on it has been discovered that the banyan tree in Auroville is actually the center of Auroville. So the Matri Mandir is next to that. The center spot is actually the banyan tree. So Satyavan falls, and then Savitri takes him below the shade of the tree and keeps him there on her lap. So the whole drama takes place. If you ask what is the setting and the stage, it is a banyan tree. Though in Savitri, Shobhinder is not writing that, but actually if you go back to the original legend, the death of Satyavan took place below the banyan tree. She was kept below the banyan tree, the body. And it's very interesting why this tree is not only a symbol of cosmic existence but of immortality, because it keeps regenerating itself. It doesn't need anything external. It is a tree which doesn't need anything from outside. As I said, the wasps are sufficient, which are on the tree. They will go to another part of the tree and cross-pollinate, and the whole process will start. So it is like life when it is constantly rejuvenating itself from inside. And it, you know, keeps on growing perpetually. And Shobhinder writes in the synthesis in the very first page, to be perpetually reborn is the condition of immortality. Even at the physical body, the same thing applies. So physical body also, we see, we are reborn several times physically, 7 times over at least, maybe many times. Every 7 years it is said that all the cells have changed. So if you see a lifespan of 100 years, so 7 to 14 times probably we are reborn. Somebody who is living 14 years, physically reborn. But only problem is that every time these cells start getting reborn, they bring out something out of itself. And new cell, the old one dies, the cell which has come out is a little weaker. That's inbuilt in, programming. So if some way we could find that the genetic material is not lost while being transmitted from one to the other, then we may find actually the secret of physical immortality. And geneticists are trying in that direction, that why every time there is a little bit of diminution, like almost like a carbon copy, it has been almost identified. And the interesting part of that identification is that there is a particular enzyme, telomerase, which transmits information from the surface to the cell and vice versa. And it is this cell which, if this telomerase, when this is defective, then you have cancer. So what is cancer? It's like it keeps on multiplying. It doesn't die easily. See, that becomes a problem. And the beauty is that this genetic material is affected not just from some inner coding information, which of course, but by the general milieu, which means our physical and psychological atmosphere. So we may not be very far away when we may discover that our thoughts and feelings are affecting the genetic material. So of course, this is going deeper into, the banyan tree as a symbol of, and also because it's the manifestation of the cosmic manifestation. So in Savitri's yoga also we see the last part of the yoga is cosmic consciousness. So she enters into that. So see how beautifully we have narratives woven around a particular, there is a story and there are stories which are around that story. In Indian thought you will see that several stories intertwine and there would be one ultimate story running through. So if you pick up anything, for instance, as I said, in Savitri's story, you will have this as an aside. Like you get one story, you will get two free. You see the Mahabharata, several stories. Now, why is it so? It's very interesting. So all these stories may look independent, but they're around a theme. For instance, when you see Savitri's story, as I said, it connects with the theme of Draupadi. Draupadi is facing a challenge of life and she is in a state where she has been humiliated. Her husbands have been literally duped of their wealth, kingdom, everything. And they are all in the forest. And during this time, the Pandavas ask Rishi Markandeya that, has there been anyone who has suffered like this? We seem to be specially marked out for suffering. Why is fate the way it is with regard to us? And then Rishi Markandeya, who is himself an immortal, he is among the 5 immortals. Another very interesting thing about Indian thought, the immortals and the Chiranjeevis. Chiranjeevis, those who live forever, and the immortals. So he says there is in far back times the story of a woman who faced adverse fate and conquered it. So it's a story which is meant to inspire Draupadi and the Pandava brothers, that whatever adversity be there, you can conquer it. But it's not a wishful thinking. We know that Savitri engages in a yoga, and what a yoga. Sri Aurobindo describes that yoga in great detail. And thereby you can conquer death. There is a whole program given there. 18-line program, 18 Sutri Karikram, and I feel we should keep it. So for a long time, keep it and remember why thou camest, the voice cried. Remember why thou camest. So teaches us step by step, in a nutshell, what is the path to conquer death and discover immortality. So this is the story of the banyan tree. Very fascinating. Savitri's story we have already taken at several different places. So Satyavan dies. And very interesting part is Satyavan must die. Why can't the magic be done that he should not die? Because there is another story which is running inside, which we fail to notice. And the story is about transmutation of death. So in the original story, it is shown as Yamaraja ultimately recovers his dharma. Of course, it's presented in a very narrative way that Savitri ultimately reminds him, what is your dharma? You are supposed to be guardian of dharma. You are not keeping the dharma. So he remembers and he says, oh, you are a wise one. I release Satyavan. But what really it means? That the whole fall of death is implied within it. It wants to keep dharma, but its understanding of dharma is very limited. For instance, how do we understand today justice? We say, we flatten everybody and say everybody should be treated in the same way. That is what is the woke. Original woke is death. You say, I don't care, I am just going to strike. To me, saint, sinner, everybody is same. No, we do that, no? So we, death also does not regard. Maybe saint, sinner, good man, bad man, doesn't matter. It strikes when it must strike. Fixed is the fatal hour and the stroke. But then what is dharma? Savitri reminds him that what you are doing is a blind action. Dharma is something very conscious. Dharma means there is an intertwining of things. So she tells him that I am supposed to have a child or children which you have blessed me with. How am I supposed to have a child or children without Satyavan? That's the argument she gives toward the end. So there is the intertwining of dharmas. That there is, she is destined to have a child. And Satyavan is supposed to die. How can Satyavan die? Unless her wish for a child or their desire for a child is fulfilled. Of course, having a child was also a duty if you go back into Indian culture. It was part of the duty and various other things were intertwined within it. So dharma has to be seen in totality. Whereas death acts that all men are equal before the law. It may sound very strange. Of course, we don't follow it. We follow something else. We say people, there are some men more equal than others. But it is based on the inversion of rules. For instance, there is a politician or there is a powerful person. He almost gets immunity from the law. But in Indian thought, you have the story of Mandavya Rishi and others, that if you have developed in your consciousness, if you are freed from ignorance, then death is supposed to ask you before taking the soul away. So there is a conscious departure and unconscious departure. Those who have grown conscious, death cannot strike at will. And we see that in Indian stories. So this is all about as we grow in consciousness. Of course, the responsibilities increase. That's how in India social hierarchy was created. The highest were those who were really aware in a much larger sense. They were supposed to be the guardians of society with a lot of responsibility on their shoulders. They were supposed to lead an austere life. And at the same time, they could not afford to make a single mistake because justice meant much harsher on these people than on others. So if we could emulate from these stories, they open many, many amazing doors of wisdom. But we are very far. We just do the word Savitri Purnima. And of course, it's the solstice. I think it's the now summer solstice that's come to a meeting point and now the night will start. But that is, by the way, I don't think that every time it coincides. Purnima is a symbol of spiritual fullness. It's spiritual mind. It's the symbol of spiritual fullness. But this fullness, while earth is laboring under the law of ignorance, cannot remain forever. So, you see, we have another story, the waxing and waning of the moon. And that story is also very amazing. So we know why the waxing and waning takes place, right? Because Chandrama is a naughty guy. He is moving in 28 houses. Now you can look at it as all the nakshatras. This is a scientific way of understanding it. But what is the symbol of the story? So Chandrama, he is going into different houses and Daksha Prajapati is not happy. He says, you are supposed to be tied to my daughter. You can't be going around in different houses. Meaning thereby he decides where the light of the spiritual mind must reach. Those who are living according to his rules and regulations. But the spiritual light wanders wherever there is an opening. So he is angry. As we get angry with those spiritual beings who we don't understand, those spiritual beings who go beyond the norm, beyond the rules, beyond the laws, it happens because spiritual consciousness liberates you. So he curses Chandrama that you will die, it's better you die. We don't curse, but we try to keep the spiritual person away. Now there is a greater acceptance. But there is a famous letter of Sri Aurobindo about it. That while we all appreciate spiritual people, we'll welcome them for a day or two in the house. But we keep them away because they don't follow any norm or rule or law. So who is the other person who doesn't follow any norm or rule or law? Shiva. So he goes to Shiva. He says, see, we are on the same boat, but you are beyond anything, but I am still within the reach of Daksha. What should I do? So Shiva says, thou shalt not die, but because his curse cannot be wasted, he is the guardian Prajapati, so you will increase and decrease, and increase and decrease, and increase and decrease. And therefore he holds it on his own head. So what does it mean? While there is night of ignorance covering this earth, spiritual consciousness will go through the waxing and waning. You cannot have the permanent light established here. So what is the solution? Up till now there was no solution. Of course people prayed to the sun that take us through a door. But Sri Aurobindo says, moon, the spiritual mind, has to be replaced by sun, the supermind. So when the sun comes, there is no more necessity of waxing and waning of the light. In Savitri, Sri Aurobindo writes about it, that you know, one goes through this rise and fall, like the waxing and waning of the moon, until it grew into the perfect integer of the soul. So this is the process which the moon teaches us. So there is, whenever there is Purnima, Purnima is that symbol of fullness, plenitude. That's why it is the day of Mahalakshmi. And that reminds me of another interesting thing about Vatvraksha. Last, there is a Sri Aurobindo's long poem called Urvashi. It's based on the story of Pururava and Urvashi. So toward the end, maybe we'll take up this some other day. So Pururava goes to, he asks for Urvashi as a boon, because he has fought in Devasur Sangram and they love each other, but she comes and stays with him for 7 years, and then she goes back because there is a tag, conditional, attached to that. So he is love mad, and he is a very capable, he is a hero warrior. So he can ask for it. So he goes, and whom does he meet? Lakshmi, the goddess of love. And then she is described that when he talks, you know, meets her, he says, you who loves the fig tree, the Vatvraksha. But the spelling of Lakshmi is different. You may not be able to find. It is L-U-X, perhaps M-I-E. So he says, you love the Vatvraksha. And you know, you, those who love, you understand. And therefore he prays to her that please grant. This is actually a very powerful passage. I can actually take out and maybe we'll close with it if you want. Very beautiful passage. This in Canto 3 of this long poem which Sri Aurobindo had written in Baroda. This poem is also about love and death. There are three poems with this theme of love and death. Savitri is the ultimate. Then Urvashi, which is based on Kalidas' original. And of course there is this Ruru and Pramadvara, love and death. Severe and beautiful, she leaned her face. What passion, Ilion, Pururavas, has led thee here to my great capital? An ancient man in the forgotten mist, the fathers of the Aryan race, of glory enamored hast thou come, or for thy people empire soliciting. But other beauty is on thy brow, and light no longer mine. Yet not for self was thou of virgin born. Because these, if you go back to the, you know, clan, Pururavas, who, all of them ultimately owe their origin to Suryavansham. Then they divided into three, Suryavanshis and the Chandravanshis and the Yaduvanshis. That's how the original was, Suryavanshis. So he says ki, she says that normally these kings never lived for themselves. So what I see now on your brows, this is another light. Yet not for self was thou a virgin born, perfect, and the aerial paths of gods permitted to thy steps, not for themselves, but to the voice of Vedic litanies, secretly praised are the dread crowns of kings for bright felicities and cruel toils. In fact, that's how Sri Aurobindo describes Raghuvansham when he has translated a little portion. He says, who were these great kings of the lineage of Raghu, which is Lord Rama's lineage? He says, they didn't live for themselves. One of the things was that they lived always for the larger good, for truth and beauty and good. Then with calm eyes, the hero, Ilion. Ilion is because Ila ka putra hai, not Ilion. He's the child of Ila and Manu. So that's another story. Very fascinating if you go to these stories. So Manu is mind and Ila is the intuitive realm. So with the combination of Ila and Manu, this offspring is born. And such an offspring, such a soul which has risen to the intuitive mind, can join a celestial line, a heavenly nymph, meaning thereby a celestial force, celestial power, celestial energy. It is possible. But that cannot continue on earth forever. It will be for a short period. So this marriage is described as the joining of earth and heaven, but very for a short period. After that, you have a choice. Either you can go into ultimately the higher realms and stay there forever, or you can continue to labor upon earth. So the great ones chose to labor upon earth, but Pururava is now making another choice. So he says, then with calm eyes, the hero Ilion, O goddess, patroness of Aryasthan. It's a word Sri Aurobindo has used. Not Hindustan. See. O goddess, patroness of Aryasthan, lover of banyan and of lotus. I, not from the fear of hell or hope of heaven, do good or ill. Reigning, I reigned over self, and with a kingly soul did kingly deeds. Now driven by a termless white desire, I wander over snow and countries vague. So he says that, you know, I have done good deeds, not for the sake of good or for fear of hell or for, you know, lure of heaven. See, real goodness is when you don't do for any reward and punishment. He says, I have done all this, but what do? I am now hit by a termless desire. Of course, this desire is for Urvashi. He says, I can't help it. I'm moving around. What a love mad he has become. And he says that this is my state. And like a vial, Lakshmi answered him. Sprung of the moon. Why? Chandravanshis. So the Suryavanshi lineage. With Suryavanshis are Buddha and then the Chandravanshi. So Chandravanshi lineage. Sprung of the moon, thy grandsire's fault in thee yet lives. Mark these lines. Very interesting. But since thy love is singly great, who is his grandsire? Yati, who wanted to be forever young and, you know, yet lives. But since thy love is singly great, doubtless thou shalt possess thy whole desire. Yet hast thou maimed the future and discrowned the Aryan people. For though Ila's sons in Hastina, the city of elephants, and Indraprastha, future town, shall rule, drawing my people to one scepter, at last their power by excess of beauty falls. Thy sin, Pururavas, of beauty and love, and this the land divine to impure grasp, yields of barbarians from the outer shore. Have you ever heard the reason why Mahabharata took place and then subsequently? the fall of the Aryan nation. He says that the Aryan race and these mighty kings were meant to live only for the good of the people and never for a selfish desire. And now we understand why Ram can be on one side so mighty and yet on the other side he has to abandon Sita, because Raj Dharma for him means everything. And yet he says, she says, because you have not been able to maintain that lineage, that power, so now there is a fault line that has appeared. And how will that fault line ultimately manifest after generations? See how a fault line, it keeps increasing, increasing, till suddenly Aryavart will yield to things of beauty and charm and will be overtaken by the barbarians. So all this from the banyan tree, like the banyan tree, many branches, each with its own unique story. Chema.